Hello, welcome back to Access Point, a podcast dedicated to video game discovery and telling the stories of the people who make them. This is episode number 4, and with me as always is Stuart. Good morning, Stuart.
Good morning. I'm with coffee. Everything is looking far better than it did 10 minutes ago, because I think, as you know, I went out last night, and I never go out, and I'm feeling a little worse for wear this morning. Everything was nicely socially distanced. We were all outside, but still, I may have had one glass of wine too many.
Well, your evening sounds better than mine. I had a torrid time at work, but we don't need to go into that. We're here to talk about video games.
Video games, yes, indeed. It's been a really interesting week. And I tell you what, I tend to go first here. Is there... Over to you. Let's see what you've been playing this week, and maybe I can vibe off that as well.
Okay, well, after we were speaking last week, I actually picked up Inscription.
There we go. So what did you think?
I tell you what, I mean, I only played it for only about an hour or two. It was, I just had a quick blast, and then I realized, you know what, I can't just have a quick go. I'm gonna have to sit down and it's the sort of game you absolutely have to sort of dedicate yourself to while you're playing it.
Yeah, you commit to this game, don't you?
Yeah.
And if you don't, you're gonna miss some things that I missed when I first sat down, and I'm seeing in reviews people missed them as well.
Yeah. So you've got to sit down, and I hate the saying, but it's an experience. You have to just put your headphones on, have no distractions, and just sit there in the dark, preferably, and just sort of get lost in the game and commit to it, because you can't keep dipping back in and out.
No, I agree. I loosely touched upon this last week, but I ended up playing this all the way through with a 70-year-old relative who has never really been into video games before. They've always wanted their video games, even back when the Mega Drive was a thing. They wanted it to be like cinema, so they couldn't be bothered. Yep. And now we're at that stage where he saw it. I said, you've got to come and play this with me. I think this will totally change your mind. So we did the same thing. I took my PC around their place, plugged it into their TV, we turned off the lights, and we sat there and played it over the course of 3 evenings.
Wow.
And in the end, he said, this is amazing. This is the sort of stuff Hitchcock would probably have done if he had access to this sort of technology. So
yeah.
I am totally on board with that.
Yeah, for me, this seems like the evolution of games now. You're seeing like the art form growing, people using sort of the media it's unbelievable. You have to play this game, because there's nothing else like it.
I think it would be easy just to play it thinking you're getting something else that's yet another Slay the Spire and flirt around the start there, but not at all. It is so very, very different. And I try to pen a worded review, and I don't have the skill set yet to do it justice.
Wouldn't know where you'd start.
I mean, I've got to do that, because it's going to be in my Game of the Year top 5. I mean, it's Death's Door is looking very shaky at number 1 there. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, I'm very impressed. So check out Inscription. Really, really impressive. So that was the first one I had a little blast on after your recommendation. And then I moved on to, well, actually, I'll give a little mention. There's a game. It was by a studio called Noisy Head Games, and the game's called Beyond the Long Night.
Oh, right.
And it's a roguelike adventure twin stick shooter.
That doesn't sound like a genre I've heard of before.
No.
What? But
basically, you're like, again, a small overview. You're like underground in like, how do I explain, like caves and tunnels, and you have, it's really, really nicely done. You have balloons. Your character is holding a bunch of balloons, and so it's like, that's how you're floating around. So you float around the level, you know, like in the air.
Oh yes.
You're not jumping. You're floating around, and your balloons are your sort of travel mechanism, holding onto them, and every time you get hit, you pop a balloon.
Right, okay.
And that they are your hit points as well.
That sounds like a game they came up with in the pub. Or they did it as a dare. Let's see. You know what? I had this idea for a game. It involves popping balloons. Yeah, on your bike. No, really.
No,
it
really.
Does.
Yeah, it does. But it's done really well. It's like pixel art again, so I had to give it a go.
Of course, you and your pixel art.
Yes. But it was a really cute little game against an indie game. But really interesting. It's not out yet. I think it's going to have a Kickstarter at the end of the year or the start of the year.
Ooh,
but,
okay. I've been dabbling in and out of Kickstarter at the moment. I used to cover it on the channel and then stopped. We discussed this last week, but I'm seeing so many developers on the site hugely underscoping the amount of money they need to bring their games in. Now, I think a lot of that's actually on purpose. The Kickstarter acts as a Kickstarter to get other funding.
Yeah.
But you're looking at people who want things. I mean, you need to add zeros onto the end of what some people are asking for.
It's a real fine line because I've seen both mistakes on both sides. I've seen people asking for like 10 grand. I'm like, well, that's great, but it's not going to do anything for you.
No.
And then I've seen people asking for 250 grand and they've got like 100 Twitter followers. I'm like, again, you're never going to get that because you just don't have the following. It's really, really hard to get that right.
I'll have a look at Kickstarter again in the new year. I still think there's some sort of avenue for it within the channel and potentially as a podcast special here and there. But as I said last week, I've just had a few times where I've thought, no, I've become the extension of their PR team, which is what I'm trying to avoid.
Yeah, it's a very fine line to sit on because you are trying to help. You know, you'd like to help the developers if you can, but anyway, we know that.
So yes, speaking of pixel art, though, it's one of the genres that I can guarantee any dedicated video on the channel will draw up to 100,000 views plus. It seems to be something that resonates so well with so many people. And you can game the system. Well, I mean, we're all after views, but there are certain phrases and certain things I know I can include in a pixel art video that will get even more people coming on board. I think one of my videos, which was just the pixel art games of 2020, 2021, 2022, were up to 500,000 views. And it keeps on bringing in the views month after month. So it's almost at that time when I need to start thinking seriously. The game that I'm making, I think it's going to be pixel art. I've been playing around with a few things here and there, but I think it works. We know people like it. And as a video on the channel, it always does the numbers.
Yeah, it's funny how we've sort of, I don't want to say regressed back, but you know, we are all longing for that classic style of game now, that look. We love that look. We've gone back on ourselves and now it's they're like flares, aren't they? Everyone wants to go back to them.
What works so well is it's we know that era of gaming, but what we've got now are the modern engines and the modern platforms, so it's just not an NES copy. We've got all the things that the new things can do and a whole load of new developers coming through who are adding so much to the equation. And it's just a delight to be able to sit back and play something that looks like something that we saw 10 years ago, 15 years ago, but play so very different.
Yeah,
I agree. Flintuck is a game I've recently come back to. Again, lovely pixel art. The idea there is that you're using a grappling hook to go through. And it's the sort of stuff that you'd never have seen for various reasons all that time ago. But it feels old, but plays so very, very fresh. And that's another game that's well worth getting hold of if you haven't played it yet.
I have not played that.
Worth adding to your wish list.
Yeah, well, it's your fault. My wish list is massive. I blame your channel completely.
Sorry, not sorry kind of thing.
Well, I've got... Let's hear what you've been playing. I've got one more game to mention that I've been playing.
Most of my week has been spent outside of playing Inscription with a suitably impressed 70-year-old. Was playing a game that's out today as we record this podcast on Tuesday the 26th of October. And that's Moonglow Bay, which I've featured a few times here and there on the channel. It also featured heavily within the summer edition of the Wholesome Games Collective. I think that's the right term. You can argue the point of whether something is wholesome or not. However, I'm going to call it a nice, cozy slice of life fishing sim But it's not just a fishing sim. I'm in awe of the character who you play, who seems to be perfectly able to reel in a 40-kilogram pollock, if ever there was, with relative ease. It doesn't even need a net. Just plucks it out as if it was literally a fish out of water. I win the day for puns. I do apologize. I played it the last couple of days. I did a live stream yesterday for the first time, and it was really well received by the people watching. And I think it works very well in what it's trying to do, and it doesn't take itself too seriously. The start is one of those where you know something's going to happen. I'm not going to spoil it, because hopefully you'll pick it up and go play it. It's also on Xbox Game Pass, so if you've got that, there's no excuses not to download this and give it a go. I did chuckle, though, because this game allows players to choose the name of their character.
Oh, yeah, we were discussing this.
Yeah, and as a having spent virtually a career in marketing and product and all that sort of stuff, whenever I'm advised in any consultative role about user-generated content with your brand, for example, what Coke did last year when you could put your name on the mm-hmm. on the Coke bottle, that opens up a can of worms that necessarily you don't want to be looking into. And I think as a choice, yeah, why not? Let's choose your character. I call mine Bob, naturally, because I always call my characters Bob if I'm able. But as far as I could tell, I don't think there was a filter in place, because naturally I had to play around and called my character a few choice words. But I'm doing it a disservice. I just think as a point of principle, I would have chosen a character's name and gone with it for whatever reason here or there. It gives players choice. Player choice is good. Not necessarily in this instance, but there you go.
Yeah, I understand.
I mean, I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed pottering, and that's a word. There's no immediacy within the game. It's something that you can just settle back with, sit on the couch and play for hours upon hours, or just pop in and out. And what's really good, it has optional couch co-op, which really wow. adds to the overall flavor. You can just pop in and out and play with another character to give your character some assistance. And there's also a cute little doggy within the game that you, of course, can pet.
Good.
And it follows you around whilst you go and find raccoons in your garden and lots of deer. There's lots of deer bouncing around this seaside Canadian village. And it's just really well done. The voxel art is so very voxel. But I enjoyed it immensely. And again, I really recommend getting a hold of it. And I'm going to probably play it all evening today because, as I mentioned to you earlier, it's half-term holidays here, wherever we are. And I have the house to myself. I am alone for the first time in 2 years. I don't know what to do. Do I listen to music? Do I play video games? Do I watch all those films I haven't seen? The choice is to the point where I don't know what I should do.
Yeah, but that's a nightmare situation. You need to have planned this way ahead because you'll just end up doing nothing all day.
I haven't planned it. That's the problem. I ended up just sitting around, picking up a book and then pottering backwards and forwards to playing video games.
Oh.
I've got a new skateboard I want to build. That's a totally old school. But I've resurrected my days of going on skate parks. Now I've hit it. Well, let's just say now I'm over 40. I'm not as good, funnily enough, as I used to be. I've still got the moves here and there, but when you fall over, I suddenly feel it. I never felt it when I was in my 20s. But I also make sure I go to the park first thing in the morning when it's empty. Otherwise, it's just this dad that's come to pick up their son. Oh, that's nice. Who is he come to collect?
Yeah.
No, I'm here to skate. But it's actually a little bit of a whinge. It's mostly a little bit later in the day, BMXs and scooters. Although you do get some really good skaters there, which is pretty cool to see. But yeah, I'm going to build a skateboard later today. So
wow,
that's
look at that.
Half an hour done.
Yeah.
But I know there was some big news. There was some big news over the last couple of days here in the, not quite the UK. What was that game show that we watched when we were younger? That was the first game show on British TV to cover video games. Do you remember it?
Oh, I used to set my timer for this. I used to live by this, and my whole week revolved around it. And that was the epic Games Master.
Games Master. You know, there was a kid in our school, and everybody's got a story like this. But there was a kid in our school who went to go on one of the episodes of Games Master right at the start, and they won the golden joystick. Brought the golden joystick into school, and they carried it around like it was the FA Cup. And I can't remember the game they played. I'd like to think it was Sonic or something like that. But whatever it was, they beat Game Master. They won the award. And that kid was made up for the rest of their lives. Well, particularly at that school anyway. Goodness knows what they're doing now. I was trying to remember their name yesterday, but it's 30 plus years ago. So it's disappeared into the grey matter. But it's lovely to see that show come back, because there's a book coming out soon as well, which I've backed.
So did
I. Kickstarter. You backed it as well.
Of course I did.
I thought you would. Of course you did.
Yeah.
And it's written, co-hosted by Dominic Diamond as well. So
very
it
exciting.
It looks really great quality, as does this reboot. So the host, I don't think will be known too well outside of the UK, though. What do you think?
No, I've not looked into who's hosting. I saw the names, but I couldn't picture who they were, because there's a couple of names mentioned. Because I only saw this news. I sent you the link yesterday, mm-hmm. I think it was.
Yes.
So
the lead, the new Games Master is a former news anchor here in the UK.
Oh, you're talking about the Games Master himself. Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
The Games Master himself. Yeah.
Yeah. Outside the UK, you wouldn't know him.
But he's perfect for the role, isn't he?
Absolutely. Sir Trevor MacDonald.
Sir Trevor MacDonald, the legend that is Sir Trevor MacDonald.
Yeah, the newsreader who's got a wonderful, unique voice. I think that's what's important.
It's superbly rounded, and the intonation and his, what do you call it? The way he speaks. Sorry.
I'll do.
I'm trying to get the word there. His diction. That's diction. It. His diction is so well put together. I think it's going to be huge. It'll work well across the US, the UK. I think it's a brilliant piece of casting. Yeah. So if you haven't heard of this gentleman, viewers from the US who are making up an awful lot of my viewers, and I think on the podcast as well, mm-hmm. go and Google Sir Trevor MacDonald and soak in the man's oral skills.
Yeah, I think what's important about Games Master back then, what do you have to remember? It ran from like, what was it? Something like 92 to 98 or something it ran.
Yeah,
it was
exactly. 92 to 98. Okay. Yeah.
There you go. It was only sort of 6 years, but there was nothing out there like this. And don't forget, this was a little bit before YouTube. So if you wanted to find out game news and information, it was only magazines.
It was only the magazines. Yeah. And coming up towards the end, 96, when the start of the internet, so to speak, really mm-hmm. helped. I remember going to university in 96 and having access to the internet really for the first time and thinking, okay, I can consume games-related material here. But you're right. I mean, it was the highlight of the week for me on television. And you, just like you, I had VHSs. Don't record things, kids. But anyway, I recorded all the episodes and we went back and watched them over and over again.
Yeah. Because there was game reviews, there was challenges, there was competitions, like I said, with the golden joystick. And it was legendary. It had everything.
It was the first time as well I was outside of Zap 64 and these Mean Machine magazines and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That you had footage that was obviously wasn't still. So Edge magazine, I've got an Edge magazine in front of me right now. I'm reading something or was before coming on to the podcast with you. But again, it's still imagery. This was footage of games in the making, but the video. And for me, that was still groundbreaking for something that I really just thought, this is changing the game. And it changed the needle just at the time.
Yeah.
Think what that program did for the likes of the Mega Drive and the PlayStation, GameCube, all those sort of things. So
yeah, definitely. It gave people a reason to, because it made you realize, because back then, don't forget, gaming wasn't as massive as it is now. So finding someone who was into gaming, as it were, was mm-hmm. like, oh, do you like games as well? Do you watch Games Master? Yeah. And it gave you something to connect over and talk to about. And then you realized, there's other people who love this. And it made sort of games cool and fun.
It did.
Which was amazing.
It made it aspirational as well, as you're saying. So it was fun. It was cool. And it gave us something to chat about in the playground rather than football.
Yeah.
Which was always the football, who beat who, and then did you watch Games Master? Of course I watched Games Master.
Of course. Oh, yeah.
I mean, well, I'd like it's a sort of thing I wish I'm going to try and get tickets to the show at some point just to see if we can go on it. But they'll be very hard to come by, I'd have thought.
There will be, yeah. Because it also, it was the only other one, do you remember Bad Influence, the TV show?
No, I don't. No.
Okay, that was like the competitor on, was it ITV? Again, another really, really good game show, but that came from Games Master, see?
Yeah, so, agreed. Yeah. Now, I was trying to think, I think there was a game show just before Games Master, but it was only ever shown on Sky. And it can't have been, but there, I remember watching, and I spoke to somebody many years later who was involved in making that. It was a guy dressed as Super Mario, and then you had teams of, well, it was people, 64 people, and they played each other over certain levels. And I think it was done by points and time. And in the end, you had a grand winner. And I vaguely remember that taking place, but the audience was full of the kids who were waiting to play, and they all looked super bored. Unlike Games Master, where it was set in what looked like some gasworks.
It was.
And it was so industrial, and the crowd were hyped. They clearly had a good hype team of people working before, during, and after the show. And yeah, Games Master, it's so brilliant to see it back.
And what I can't believe, it's never been replicated. There still isn't a game show on TV.
Now, that's a really interesting... I'd like one of the guests I'd love to come on this show. I know you've interviewed them before. Dan, as of Ben and Dan from the Lair of the Clockwork God. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this offline before and why commissioning editors do not want to commission games. They post Games Master. Yeah. So that's something that would be awesome to chat about. We must send them an email.
Yes, we will, definitely. I can't believe it hasn't been done before. The biggest entertainment sort of medium there is out there, it makes more money than films. Mm-hmm. We've got all sorts of film review shows and all sorts of stuff, and nothing on games. It's insane. I mean, I know YouTube has changed that a lot because people are making their own content now.
Yes.
But there's still a space, I think, for Games Master, which is why it's returning. So it's returning to E4, if you are aware of that
That's
channel.
That's not a bad channel. It's not buried away on some satellite like the Spitting Image was.
Yeah, Spitting Image.
Sorry, that's another reference there that will go over the heads of far too many people. Sorry about that.
So that was the big news for me this week. That was very exciting, very exciting.
I was disappointed to see as well that the ongoing chip shortage and potential lack of new GPUs, because I'm trying to build myself a new streaming PC, and I'm struggling to get the parts that I want. I'm not saying the parts I need, because I don't need these parts. I just want these parts to future-proof what I'm doing. And I know you run a dual setup. At the moment, I've just got a single PC up and running, but I'm really enjoying my live streaming at the moment. And I've started to do it more and more. And the views are starting to pick up, which is good. And I get great feedback. I'm definitely not going to stop the videos. I really do enjoy doing the edited, and the creation of it is what I really enjoy. But there's the connection with live streaming that obviously you don't get from video on demands. But it's that gentle balance. And again, we have rubbish internet here, although that's about to be uplifted. So I'm going to be able to stream in at least 2K, maybe even 4K at some point soon. So you'll be able to see all of me in far too much detail.
Yeah, the live streaming, I create videos and live stream, and I much prefer the live streaming. That's where I started on my content creation, just playing. Again, I started on Twitch, and they're just maniacs. So I'm just slowly just not streaming there anymore, really. And my streams are mainly going on YouTube now, just because it's...
I think mine will only ever be on YouTube. I do have a Twitch account, although I'm locked out of it.
Yeah, good luck getting hold of someone.
I've been trying to get hold of somebody with a dual, because it's a dual factor, a two-factor authentication issue. Mm. I've got another funny story about Twitch. When I first signed on to Twitch, I used my YouTube channel as a reference point, as they ask, have you got anything to link? So I linked my Twitter and YouTube and immediately got an email back going, congratulations, you can apply for partnership status. So I thought, okay, cool. I don't stream. I've got less than 100 followers, but if you want to give me partnership status, I'll fill in the form. So I filled in the form And a few days later, got an email back going, no, sorry, you don't qualify. It's like, why? Why set up the algorithm that sniffs other feeds? And then when human eyes get onto it, you go, nah, not tonight, sunshine.
That sums Twitch up perfectly. That's exactly what they're like. It seems they're just winging it. That's what they're doing. They're really, really poorly managed, Twitch. It's really put me off. It's really disappointing.
Their leak from the last couple of weeks was another... As far as I can tell, no personal information was lost, so to speak. But I'm happy streaming on YouTube, and I it's where my audience is, so I've got no reason to go anywhere else. And I think YouTube will probably start to evolve. It needs gifted subs. It needs some other things, better moderation as well, because yesterday I was moderating myself, which is a pain, but I'm not yet big enough to really need a bespoke mod to sit with me. But it would be easier for me to do certain things if I had a tool set rather than having to click somebody's name, right click, scroll down, then ban them. So it seems I'm enjoying streaming, and it's something I'll certainly be doing a lot more. I'm going to do a stream later in the week for a new first person shooter game, which is very rare for me.
That is
but
rare.
It's based on, I think it's Div, it's based on the Cthulhu franchise. Okay. So ignoring the gentleman he was, the art is interesting. And I'll leave it there. I'm going to do another live stream later with that. And I've started to do a few sponsored streams here and there simply because it's a nice way of earning a little bit of revenue. Mm-hmm. But I'm also very, very clear that it doesn't affect the coverage, what I think of the game, or more importantly, the perception I have when I'm playing it. But we're not talking about ninja levels of sponsorship here. Just enough to just enough to put food on the table.
Okay, so I've got one more game I just want to mention, and the reason why I want to mention this is because the marketing, it's an interesting thing to think about. If you are an indie developer, then you need to consider this. So the game I was playing is called RC Rush. Now this
I know this, but go on.
Yeah.
This is all yours.
So this is basically a radio-controlled racing game where you play radio-controlled cars around a track, et cetera, et cetera. You know, first of all, the game, it looks beautiful. And what was important for me is while you're jumping with the cars, and this sounds weird, but while you're jumping with the cars in the air, they feel like radio-controlled cars because you can't move the cars in the air, you know, steer it and stuff. They feel like, and the sound effects they've got is perfect. So you get that sound of just thud, and it feels like a radio controlled car, which is really important.
So there's no physics during the flight. There's just natural physics.
Natural physics. And it feels, like I said, you get that thud of your, it doesn't feel like you're driving the car. Really, really nicely done. It's fantastically done.
Now, I've been asked if I've played this game via Twitter. And I've seen it because I followed up that question, but I haven't yet played it. But I'm certainly going to pick that up later today and have a whiz, because somebody of a certain age like me who had one of those as a Christmas present one year and was instantly disappointed with that fact that you couldn't run around with it inside on the carpet, because, you know, British homes back then had a carpet. It's all slow and rubbish. And then you take it outside, and it would rain, or you'd go down the BMX track. Do you remember those? On there, and it would suddenly break because it couldn't stand the impacts.
Well, this has got everything in it. So this has got all the tracks where you are obviously driving around gardens and mud patches and stuff. So it's like a cross between sort of the Micro Machines, you know, where your car's small, and a racer. It's got everything, and it has multiplayer coming soon. It's not active yet, so the multiplayer is coming.
Awesome. A multiplayer game like that would be brilliant. Yeah, absolutely,
and
brilliant.
All the cars, they handle completely differently, so they've all got the stats, and it does feel like, it's just the feeling. I think that's what's important. They feel like they should, which is vital. They don't feel like they're not connected to the ground, which a lot of cars have that problem, you know, and you think... That's why I never liked Ridge Racer. I hated Ridge Racer. It felt so fake. I just really didn't like it.
Have you played Circuit Superstars?
No, I haven't.
That's a top-down racer in the spirit of Micro Machines, but using modern day physics. It's just come out of early access. Picked it up. I played it at EGX 2019, and it was really interesting because they had two sides to the display. They had one side, which was four-player local co-op, all racing with each other. And on the other side was timed 10 laps. And I loved seeing the different reactions people played. The dads nearly all went to the timed, how fast can I do the 10 laps?
Yeah.
The kids were all about couch co-op. Yeah. And it's a fabulous game to play with friends and family in the co-op because, again, the handling, it just works so very well. And you can pull off some amazing moves. So
wow, cool.
Circuit Superstars, I wanted to talk about it a little bit more, but for some reason haven't got around to doing so. But this little nudge of yours has meant to...
Yeah.
Well worth talking about.
I think it's still in early access, or it's still early because there's still, like I said, multiplayer is coming soon. And I do have to say, though, the menu system needs work. Really. Okay. It's the case of you're scrolling across the cars, and to do that, you have to highlight the button. And it's that thing of which color is highlighting, which one isn't, you know, blue and green. I've got to set the button. It's like, just use the thumbstick to scroll through. I don't need to press a button to scroll. So little things like that. But again, it's still early, but that was driving me a bit nuts. But But the reason why I haven't played this before, because I've seen this probably mentioned for a good 6 months at least, you know, on Twitter and people mentioning it. Because there's a Psychic Parrot on Twitter. Do you follow him?
Okay, yes. I don't follow him, but no, I've heard of him.
He's one of the developers on there, and I've seen him tweeting about it and messing up. Oh, that looks great. However, he is very much into his VR.
Okay.
And talks about it, which is great, and he does lots of VR stuff. And from what I thought is, I thought this was a VR-only game. That's why I never touched it, because I thought, well, I don't have VR, so I won't bother with that one then. So be really careful if you are talking about, because it has VR in it. That's the thing.
Right. Well, VR.
Exactly. And your face there says like, well, I'm not gonna try it. Then it's no good for me. And that's what I thought, because it's a VR game. I was like, it's no good for me. But it has. If you go into the Steam page in the description, and the little text it says, can be used with VR or not. I'm like,
VR is one of those things. I put on a VR headset like I always have, and it makes me feel instantly nauseous. And it's this thing that keeps on coming back. It's like 3D TV. Every cycle, you get something back. And I remember playing the VR way back when Craig Charles, remember, he had a TV series. It might be another game actually for us, a series to look at, where he did a load of stuff in VR a long, long time ago. But for me, it just doesn't work. I picked up the Sony VR system. I'll probably pick up the second edition when it comes, but for me, no, thank you.
But yeah, exactly. And I'm not really that interested. I mean, I'd like to see how they do this, you know, radio controlled cars with VR. Yeah. That might be quite cool as a little sort of, I'll give that a little go. But it's just the fact that I thought this was a VR only game. So if you are doing this, be very careful with your marketing that you don't cut off a load of people thinking it's a VR only game. That's all I'm saying. But it isn't. You can do either. There you go.
I had a look at No Man's Sky in VR, but again, I lasted maybe 5 minutes before feeling as if I needed to go and be violently ill. It just doesn't work for me. It really doesn't.
Yeah. No, I think it's a very split market to be going into, I think, VR. I think that's a... Yeah, well, hey, but the fact you can use it without is a good thing. Just make sure you make people aware.
So next week, have you got any thoughts about what you might be playing? There's a few games coming out that could be worthy of our time. The first is Time Loader, which comes out on November the 3rd, which is a story-driven, physics-based platforming puzzler. I'm going to hopefully pick that up and have a play. But also, I'm going back once again to look at Wildermyth, which came out a couple of months ago, but I haven't given it the time I think it deserves. And dabbling here and there, I think that could be another Game of the Year contender.
I've heard two people mention this game, and again, it's by the sounds of it, is once they'd sort of committed to it again and really gone into it, they said it was absolutely fantastic.
the people I've spoken to say it comes down to the writing and the overall story, yeah. which once it grabs you, it grabs you. And they kept making jokes about campfires. So I don't know if that's a Dark Souls reference or something.
Oh.
I somehow doubt it, but you never know. I had to get I had to say Dark Souls. I think we're going to have to say it in every single podcast. Yeah. Some
little snippet there somewhere, see if you can find the Dark Souls reference.
Definitely.
Yeah, well, I was looking to... I picked up a game called The Greeks.
Not heard of this.
Okay, so I can't think who was... It was a very... Who recommended it? It was... In fact, it was... I think it was Vlad Mahulits, who is the lead developer, or only developer, on the Dark games.
Yes.
I'll get to those another episode, because won't stop talking. So I'll go back to that.
That character would be wonderful to have on this pod. I think we're a wee bit too small for him, but you never know.
If you're going to have a developer man crush, he's the man for me. Oh my God, I could talk about him forever. He's a fascinating, fascinating story. But anyway, he mentioned this game, and I was like, I did a short like compilation video a couple of months ago, and I featured Greeks. However, this is where the story goes a bit funny. I searched on Steam. I was like, I'll pick that up. So I typed it in. And I just went, Greeks, yep. Type it in, search. There it is. Purchase. Okay, pick that up. Great. Install, done. I was like, yeah. I was like, Greeks. I was like, I thought it looked a bit different. I was like, Oh, I've bought Creeks.
You bought Creeks by Annapurna. No, not Annapurna. Is it Annapurna?
It might be... I can't think who did it now. Yeah, so no, I picked up Creeks, which is a point and click adventure mystery game.
Know that. It was in my top 10 game of the year rundown from last year.
And I was like, oh, I don't remember it looking like this. I forgot this was already on my wish list. This looks fantastic. Do you know what? I'll keep it. So then I moved over and actually bought Greeks as well. So
well done.
Two games sound very similar. So be careful when you're searching.
Yeah, passing off, they'd call that in some ways, but I don't think this was intentional.
My fault.
Yeah, I think that's probably a great place to wrap up this episode 4 of Access Point.
That's a perfect place to wrap up. Thank you very much. And thank you, everybody, for the feedback and the listens. We're getting some fantastic numbers. They're really picking up now, so we really appreciate all your listens and the sharing of the podcast on Twitter and everywhere you're doing it.
It's way above my expectations. Yeah. I don't know about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been really, really well received. So thank you, everybody. And if you would like to leave us a review, then you can do that on the Apple Store, Apple Podcast Store, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
Or anywhere you want to leave a review is hugely appreciated. So that wraps it up for this week. Thank you, Stuart. Nice talking to you again.
Yeah, lovely. It's been great. It's been different. My head doesn't hurt as much as it did 40-odd minutes ago. But onwards into next week.
Thank you, everyone. Goodbye.